My beloved friends, let us continue to love each other since love comes from God. Everyone who loves is born of God and experiences a relationship with God. The person who refuses to love does not know the first thing about God, because God is love. So you can't know God if you don't love. My dear, dear friends, if God loved us like this, we certainly ought to love each other. No one has seen God ever, but if we love one another, God dwells deeply within us, and God's love becomes complete in us, perfect love. God is love. When we take up permanent residence in a life of love, we live in God, and God lives in us. This way, love has the run of the house, becomes at home, and mature in us, so that we're free of worry on Judgment Day. Our standing in the world is identical with Christ. There is no room in love for fear. Well-formed love banishes fear. Since fear is crippling, a fearful life, fear of death, fear of judgment, is one not yet fully formed in love. We, though, are going to love, love and be loved. First we were loved, now we love. God loved us first. If anyone boasts, "I love God," and goes right on hating their brother or sister, thinking nothing of it, that person is a liar. If they won't love the person they can see, how can they love the God they can't see? The command we have from Christ is blunt. Loving God includes loving people. You've got to love both.
What's love got to do with it? What's love got to do with anything? Black History Month has begun. A few weeks ago, people all over the country took a day to honor Dr. King. He was a great man, a prophet, an incredible preacher, and a change agent who sacrificed everything in his work for justice and in his attempt to lead people to the beloved community. It's pretty clear, isn't it? We have not yet made it to the promised land. I'm going to be very transparent and honest with you today, and it's going to be hard, because we cannot move forward if we're too afraid to look at where we've been. I grew up in a racist home. People of color were less than. The N-word was used in my home as a part of the daily vernacular. I was told not to associate with people of color at the risk of threats from my own father. I am ashamed of it, but it is part of my story. And I have to own that piece of my own history. I've tried to change this for my children, but racism and prejudice strains run deeply throughout history in implicit ways that a white woman of privilege cannot always recognize. Sometimes it takes a good friend of color who will call me out and teach me, help me grow. And I've grown. And I'm still growing, as I too have that deep longing for the beloved community. I too believe that that is possible, but we are not there yet. We're not there yet, are we? We got a long, long way to go. We hold Dr. King's legacy in such reverence that it can make the world think that the hard work of justice making has been done. It can make us believe that things are on even playing fields for all people in the world. It allows the threads of hate and prejudice and discrimination to implicitly weave a world together where things are still not fair, not just. And it keeps people, really good people, marginalized. Church, we got some work to do. Brothers and sisters, we surely have not made it to the promised land yet. Surely we've not made it. Oh, I feel ill prepared to preach this sermon today. And my reflections today come from conversations I had throughout the weeks prior with Daniel and my friend Aaliyah and my friend Bridget, who have been honest with me and told me the truth and tried to teach me so I could grow, even when it was hard to tell me and even when I didn't want to hear it. They taught me. This sermon comes from conversations with my son and daughter, and much from texts that my daughter sent to me as we talked and she challenged me. First of all, I want to start by addressing every white person in this room. And I'll do so by using first person. I am not a person of color. I've never known what it's like to be on the oppressed end of racism. I've never known that. I have immense privilege. And my daily life is a lot easier because of that privilege. Often the places we feel least qualified and overburdened by our own inadequacy are the exact places that our voices need to be heard. And I feel very inadequate today to preach a sermon about racism. But it's in these situations of inadequacy that we must draw from the source of strength, so that we can prove to ourselves and to others that our message of love is valuable enough to share. For if God is love, and we are loved, how can we remain silent in the face of injustice? For friends, being silent with injustice is even a bigger problem than feeling inadequate. I may not be the most qualified person to speak about injustice, but who am I not to take a chance to do it? We church folks see each other as brothers and sisters, not as colorblind people, but as people who embrace each other as gifts to each other. We cannot pretend that our color doesn't matter. We can't pretend our color doesn't matter, because it does. Our brothers and sisters of color live a different daily life than I do. It's not fair. It's not just. It is just plain wrong. It's a sin. And I rarely ever use that word. It's a sin. I have never gone in the store and been followed by security and treated as if I'm a thief about to steal. I've never been targeted for the color of my skin. I have never had to set my child down and talk about what to do if a policeman pulls you over. And I asked Daniel, and he told me, yes, this is a conversation that black parents have with their children. You pull over to the light. You keep your hands on the steering wheel. Do not move unless the police officer tells you. Say, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. I didn't have to tell my son that. I have never had to worry about my son or daughter being shot in the street by someone for wearing a hoodie, or walking through a neighborhood that they didn't belong, or simply because they had their hands in their pockets. Oh my, we have not made it to the promised land, have we? We got a long way to go, a long, long way to go. And some days for me, it feels like we're never going to get there. Even so, we cannot. And we must not be afraid to voice the truth of injustice wherever we are, whenever we see it. We cannot be silent. But just because we feel inadequate. Nelson Mandela, a powerful South African activist, still shared his goal of equality while imprisoned in a tiny little cell for years, simply fighting for justice. You know, there wasn't anything innately special about Nelson Mandela. But he had the strength to speak up in adversity. I cannot say if his strength came from within or through the understanding that his pain was not just his own. It wasn't just his own. Perhaps the call of God beckoned him to continue the work in such a strong way that he could not turn it off. He once said, I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. So I stand here unsure of what it's like to be targeted based on the color of my skin. But I can acknowledge that racial equality is not my expertise. It's not my expertise in many ways. However, I too have known fear. I too have known the fear of the pain of oppression and feeling invisible. Perhaps the most courageous things we can do in moments like this is just this. Simply speak our truth about where we come from and the part we've played in the oppression of others. And then we stand up to the voices in the world and ourselves that tell us all the time that we have nothing to share. I sense society is based on a hierarchy that often teaches us to feel inferior. We can trick ourselves into believing that everyone else has it just a little bit easier than ourselves. We can walk through life tallying up our losses and comparing our story to the next person. And we love the story of an underdog, don't we? We love that story. Perhaps it's because in many ways they achieve things we never expect them to. To our surprise and sometimes our own ignorance. People are capable of far more than we ever assume they are. I ask myself, when will I learn not to judge? What's going to make that possible? At the same time, I wonder, when will I quit putting limits on courage? And will I start putting my bet on the love of God beating in our human hearts that can pulse out into the world? When, oh when, is that going to happen? When's it going to happen, folks? All the stories of our faith about Jesus are based on his ability to accept others. As they are. Without judgment. He never approaches those on the outskirts with preconceived notions about their ability. He never did. Wouldn't our outlook of Jesus change if he said, oh, but you're poor. But you're a leper. Would we change what we believe about Jesus' radical love if we were to say, or hear someone say, oh yeah, look at him. He did turn that water into wine. And yeah, he walked on water. But did you hear where he came from? Didn't you know he was born in a barn? His acceptance of others and himself acknowledges that while we are all flawed, and let's admit it, we're all flawed, we are also deserving of love and of a community who loves us into our best selves despite our own shortcomings. Despite our own shortcomings. When we study the stories of Jesus and his radical God love, we find compassion. We find love. We find both of those things for people who are different than him. And he always had a willingness to hear. As great teachers and leaders often do, Jesus was able to see humanity. He saw humanity in people who are often overlooked. The ability to hear others' pain and remember that we too have wounds is often what connects us. I mean, let's be truthful here. That's what brought most of us here, isn't it? Pain, rejection, loneliness, this deep craving to be loved. Love found us. It caught us off guard. It lifted us up. Sharing stories about our pain and rejection is and can be healing. Daniel and I had a conversation recently. He told me about the book that Marshall was telling me about. It is going to invite us to talk about hard things. It is going to invite us to hear each other's stories and perhaps be changed by it. And perhaps by doing so, it will inspire us to change the world where we can. Pick up a copy. Read the first two chapters. Come next Saturday and let Daniel lead us in a hard conversation. Because racism still exists. Racism still exists. To change, we, all of us, have to look in the mirror. We have to look back to see where we came from, even if it hurts. We have to be honest with ourselves and with each other. We have to be willing to allow God's love to move through us, over us, in us, and allow it to change us. Changing, and by sharing our stories, all of that is important. But sharing and listening to stories of others who have been exiled is sometimes more important for their pain because it must be heard. I am a big-boned, short-haired, white preacher woman. And I stand here in front of all of you all. I cannot change the color of my eyes or make myself taller because I'd be a lot thinner if I was taller. Change my genetic makeup. But my heart is malleable. And I'm trying to keep it open to learn from each of you. I have to learn so I can grow. So that I can be changed by love. I know that I can walk outside at night without being targeted because of my race or my sexual preference or my gender preference. I also know that most churches I've ever been to have pictures of white Jesus hanging on a wall. It's another implicit message that teaches white is better than color. I have access to things many don't, and I admit, often take that privilege for granted. It is okay to say, I'm not perfect. It's really okay. None of us are perfect. But it is not okay to accept being stagnant in our understanding of community and love. I am on a journey. We are on a journey and we're trying to get to the promised land of beloved community. We have come far in loving neighbors and building relationships. And perhaps, just perhaps, because our congregation is accepting and loving, perhaps it gives us a sense and an illusion that somehow we made it. Because you know we are more diverse than other churches. Truth is, we haven't, and we won't. Until every person in the world can take a walk at night. Until my friends don't have to worry if a policeman pulls them over for speeding. Until they no longer have to fear for their life in those circumstances. Until people like our beloved Miss Hattie, who are passed over their careers because of the color of their skin. Our Miss Hattie trained numerous white men to be her boss when she was on this earth. And the truth is, that job she was training those white men for should have been hers all along.
Amen.
We cannot make it when people are stopped at airports and at borders seeking liberty and justice and happiness only to be deported. Or separated from their families, or simply kept back with armed guards and fences and walls. Reverend King shared his dream. He spoke it loudly, and he risked it all. Jesus did the same. Both of them knew the task would not be easy. Both had people who tried to silence them, but you know what? Both of them rocked on in spite of that. They just rocked on. Their love and conviction kept flowing. The message of Jesus was too important to be silenced. We look back on our history and we wonder, when are we going to learn? The past, when examined, is painful. We might have some pain come up in our discussions, but we got to talk about it. But you know what? Sorry is not enough. It cannot be enough. Being sorry that I grew up in a racist home, that as a child I actually used the N-word, that I thought the color of my skin was best. Sorry is not enough. It can't be enough. Sorry is a start. I'm sorry my ancestors enslaved your ancestors. But you know what? Words mean nothing if we stop there, and sorry is not enough. The remainder of our part in the ongoing story of humanity is yet to be written. King did not stop. Jesus did not stop, and we for sure cannot stop. We are all the beloved children of a Creator. And we are far from where we started, but we got a long, long way to go. We cannot limit our God-given potential. We cannot ask if we're worthy. This is because God is love and embraces us because of ourselves and in spite of ourselves. Sisters and brothers, we ain't even close to the promised land. We got a long way to go, and it's going to be a hard journey to get there. It'll be a hard journey. Together we can move forward if we're willing to examine our unconscious bias and move forward into more authentic parts of our story. I challenge each one of us in this room to be the change, to live the change, to believe that love can and will change the world one person at a time if we come together. If we show up for each other, if we take note of people others don't see, if we reach out our hands and our hearts and risk really seeing each other. We don't have it right yet. Will we allow God's love to pull us forward? Will we let God guide our feet toward the community that we long to live in? Are we willing to admit, to give up our comfort? Are we willing to move? We can't even begin to make change if, like me, we think we don't have a story worth telling. Everybody's got a story worth telling. So here's the beginning of ours. Once upon a time, there was love. God love. God is in me. God is in you. God is in each person. So let's join our hearts and our hands and move toward love. We can't get there alone, but together we move forward. We may not see the promised land, but we sure can get a little closer to the next part of the story. You ask me, what's love got to do with it? What does love got to do with it? Everything. Everything. Every little thing. Amen.